The parsha we're going to read today, the part of the parsha we're going to read today from Parshas Emor, is Perek Chav Gimel, probably one of the more well-known chapters in the Torah, because it encompasses many of the laws of the Moadim, of the holiday. Right? So anytime you want to know about a holiday, you immediately know Vayikra Perek Chav Gimel, in the middle of Parshas Emor, and you'll immediately go there. So today I thought we'd start learning about the parasha. And then we'd also learn a few of the midrashim about Sfiras HaOmer and also about Shavuos.
Okay, how much time do we know?
What? All that?
A lot.
Depends how much I ramble. Okay.
We won't.
You don't complain. Okay. Good. Rabbi Hashem al Moshe Limor. Chaf Beis, his parachav Yom HaPasuk Aleph. Not bad. The Berel B'nei Yisrael v'amarta alehem. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them. Okay. Now, immediately, that's a little unusual. Almost, you don't really have that very often. Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem. Okay, so what is the difference between the daber, to tell them, and to say to them?
Speak
is more the imperative.
Saying,
but...
Say, the daber, right, daber al b'nei Yisrael is a commandment. What is v'amarta?
Tell them, just talk.
Amarta, I said to you.
Word by word. Okay. Moadei Hashem, asher tikru'u osam mikra'i kodesh, ein lahem moadai. The holidays of God that you will call them mikra'i kodesh, names of holiness, ein lahem moadai. These are my moadot. These are my holidays. What are they? Sheishes yamim te'asem alacha. וביום השביעי שבת שבתון מקרא קודש כל מלאכה לא תעשו שבתי להשם בכל מושבותיכם. Let's translate. These are very, very weird. I mean, we all know these psukim, but it's very unusual. Sheishes yamim te'aseh melacha. Do work. You must do work for 6 days.
No, work shall be done 7th day.
As long as you don't have to do it, as long as somebody else is doing it for you. Umayom hashvi, on the seventh day, Shabbat Shabbaton Mikra Kodesh. What is a Shabbat Shabbaton?
Shabbat
Shabbaton. The Sabbath of Shabbos is Mikra Kodesh. It is called Kodesh. Komu lachalos asu. Don't do any work. Shabbati laHashem b'chol moshvotzeichem is a Sabbath for God b'chol moshvotzeichem in all of your dwelling places. Okay, tell me problems with that pasuk while I look up my midrash. What's wrong with that pasuk? So there's a few very unusual things.
Shabbos is not a moadim.
Therefore, question: why in the world is Shabbos placed in halacha moadim? Eilei moadai. These are my moed. These are my holidays. Number one, Shabbos. What?
Well, that's the most important day in Kedusha, I think it's the next to Yom Kippur and Shabbos.
Why do you say that?
Because you can't work. There's all the things that you can't do on those two, and you can do a lot more things on the other holidays.
Okay, fine, but it's interesting. Usually they say, what is the holiest day of the year? Yom Kippur. Why? Because the Torah calls it Shabbat Shabbaton. Yeah, but the Torah also calls Shabbos Shabbat Shabbaton. That's just something I thought would be interesting to point out. Okay. That's question number one. Why is Shabbos included on the list? Then, if you look at the language, what is the difference between Moadei Hashem and why does God say Elohim Moadai? What's the difference between, is he where it says in Pasuk Bet, Moadei Hashem, these are the holidays, Elohim Moadai. God says, these are my holidays, Moadai. And why does it say the word Moed twice? Why is Shabbos called Shabbat Shabbaton? Shabbati l'Hashem b'chol moshvotzeichem.
It means that the Shabbos is more holy as the Lord.
What's that?
He declared it. He initiated that day for a rest.
Correct. So that's why, but all of them are God's holidays, Moadai. So why specifically?
The other ones are more or less set by the people now, according to the
Torah. Very good. Very good. That's great. Says the Midrash. I'm going to read your Midrash. What does it say? Eilei Moadei Kodesh. Mao says a midrash. Mahu asher tikru'u osam. That you will call them, right? That you should call them. Let me just see if it's in Rashi. No. Says the midrash. Ela ap alpi, even though. God told Moshe Rabbeinu how to figure out the different years. So God said, basically, based on how I would figure it out, here's what God said to Moshe. Based on how I would figure it out, you know, Rosh Hashanah in the year, you know, 2004, 5,765 is going to fall out on a Tuesday, September 5th. That's what God said. But that's what I think. You guys can do whatever you want. Therefore, if they want to change a month and add a, you know, add a month in and change the year, they can. As it says, how do I know? These are the holidays that are Mikra Kodesh that are holy. Asher karati otam b'moadam ein omer kin. It's not that God said I call them holy. El asher tikre'u, you will call it holy. That's very good. That's exactly what the Midrash says. It's the difference between Moadei Hashem. What are Moadei Hashem? What are God's holidays that are unchangeable?
Shabbos.
And everything else?
Yeah, Shabbos.
It depends on us.
On the calendar.
And the moon and the calendar is also dependent upon the Jewish people on the moon. Right. Very good. He colored all those. How many did he make?
He made one, and then we had.
And he gave you the original?
This is a photocopy.
That's a photocopy? That's a color copy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. And what is Shabbos doing there?
Well,
Shabbos is... What's that?
That was created.
Correct. I mean, I'm looking for something deeper. I don't know. I haven't, you know, I agree with you. Shabbos is like, you know, the linchpin, the basis of everything. Without Shabbos, there's nothing. I don't know. I'm looking for something more. Look at Rashi. Daber al bnei Yisrael moadei Hashem. I'm sorry, skip Kibbol. Sheishet yamin. Ma inyan Shabbos eitzol moados. So Rashi also wants to know, the Mishnah also wants to know, what's the connection between Shabbos and the moados? If you're talking about holidays, what are you doing Shabbos? L'lam decha, to teach you, shekola mechalel es ha-moados, moados, if you violate the holidays, ma lin alav kilu chilul es ha-shabbosos. It's the same as if you were mechalel Shabbos. And if you fulfill the holidays, that's like you are Makayim Shabbos as well. Alright, so why is Shabbos mixed in? You don't like it?
No.
Okay, I don't like it, but you're, you know.
Kind of mixed everything together.
Yeah, I know. I mean, to be honest with you, in our day and age, it's not, you know, it you don't find somebody who's Shomer Shabbos. Yeah, but I don't do Pesach.
But you have the opposite,
yeah? No. You don't have people that keep Pesach. You have people that observe Pesach. You never find somebody who says, yeah, I'm, you know, 100% Sukkah and Sukkis, Lulav and Esrog, you know, you don't do any Malacha, but then the next Friday night they're going to the movies. You know, those things nowadays, maybe the reason they go together is because the Torah mixed them together. That's not, we're looking for something a little bit better, a little bit stronger. Okay. Let's go on. Eilu Moadei Hashem, Mikra Kodesh, Tikru Hashem v'Moadam. So here are the Moadei Hashem. Here they go. V'Chodesh Rishon Ba'Arba Asar Yom L'Chodesh Ben Harbayim, Pesach L'Hashem. Okay? On the 14th day of Nisan, on what day? 14th day of Nisan, Ben Harbayim, in the afternoon, is Pesach to Hashem. By the way, when does Pesach start?
14th at night.
What's that?
The 14th at night.
Which day?
Well, it's really the 15th already.
Oh, so why does the Torah say the 14th?
Because they had to get ready for it. Don't they have to get ready for
it? Sure, I have to get ready for Sukkot. When does Sukkot, by building a Sukkot, when does the Torah say Sukkot starts?
Well, there's a reason why I can't remember. There's a reason why I know I can't remember.
Correct. So I'm just pointing out to you, we observe Pesach begins on the 15th day of Nisan.
That's right.
But here the Torah says, Ba'arba'a shayom l'chodesh ben harbayim, the 14th day in the afternoon.
Well, you're not allowed to eat chametz on the afternoon.
No, Ben Harbayim, not at night.
I know.
You know, because look at the next pasuk. Ubachamishah, so Yom Lachodesh Hazeh, Chag HaMatzos Lashem. On the 15th day, meaning starting from the night before, that's Chag HaMatzos, Shivas Yami Matzos Tochel.
Well, what does it say people don't eat
matzah?
Wait a minute.
Well, but you don't eat matzah on the day. You don't eat matzah, correct? But that Yom HaMatzos, so that is a Zerah B'Rabanan. You cannot eat Pesach. You cannot eat Chametz. You can't eat Chametz in the afternoon. You cannot eat Chametz. That's correct. Why?
Because you're bringing the Korban Pesach.
So you're bringing the Korban Pesach. Correct. So what does Rashi say? If you just look, Bein Harbayim, Rashi says, Mishay Shal Tamala from the sixth hour, Pesach Lashem, Hakravat Korban Shishimo Pesach. Rashi says, it's not a holiday. It's just that the Torah is telling you have to offer the Korban Pesach. Except there's only one problem with saying it's not a holiday. What would that problem be?
You're already in a festive mood.
Well, you are in a festive mood, but what would that problem be?
Very busy.
And you wouldn't be able to bring it.
No, the problem is, it's not that you can't do malacha. The problem is, if it's not a holiday, look, what chapter are we in the Torah? What is our topic?
You can't eat chametz.
Eila mo'adei Hashem mikra'i kodesh.
It's a holiday.
So the Vilna Gaon said, and it was somewhat of a chiddush at this time, you know, and it was something novel, he said that the 14th day of Nisan, from the sixth hour on, is a chag. It's a holiday.
Yeah.
It's a holiday. No. That's separate. Bechorim is in the morning. The 14th day of Nisan from in the afternoon is a separate holiday, not of Pesach. It's the holiday of the Korban Pesach. It's the holiday of the 14th day of Nisan. And there are certain laws that go along with it. You ever heard of the halacha that you're not allowed to do work on Erev Pesach after Chatzos?
The women never heard it.
Yeah, because you're allowed to cook anyway. You can cook all yantif, so that doesn't count. Yeah.
Not
doing physical work. Not doing work, right. So we're sitting at home, reclining, you know, in our cheesy chairs while you guys are, you know, slaving over the stove. Right, Avadim Hayinu. But there's an idea, this conveys the idea, that Erev Pesach, that the Korban Pesach itself is a chag. It's a holiday. There's a specialness to that particular time, and it has a particular mitzvah. Okay, fine. Then we learn that the 14th day is a Pesach Hashem. 15th day is a Chag HaMatzos. 7 days. Beyom HaRishon Mikra Kodesh Yelachem. On the first day is Mikra Kodesh. So when the Torah says Mikra Kodesh, what does Mikra Kodesh mean?
The holy day.
If Shabbos is Mikra Kodesh, and the first day is Mikra Kodesh, what does Mikra Kodesh mean? If you call it Kodesh.
Holy.
Like this. In what way?
No
malacha, right? Mikra Kodesh Yalachem, Kom Meleches Avodah Lo Sa'asu.
No work to speak of.
You're not allowed to do any work on the first day. V'yikraftem Yisheh LaHashem Shiva Samim, and you bring an offering together for 7 days. V'yom HaShvi'i Mikra Kodesh, on the seventh day is Mikra Kodesh.
It's a holiday.
Again, Kom Meleches Avodah Lo Sa'asu.
Not allowed to do work.
Correct. So the Torah said the whole holiday is 7 days long. The first day is a Kodesh.
And the last.
The last day is Mikra Kodesh. It's interesting, by the way. Very interesting. It's an interesting comment that I think is important for people. They don't realize. How do you define something as Kodesh? Last week, we had the Federation, the Young Adult Division, combined with Hillel. The Hillel is for the college-age students. They did a Shabbat dinner exchange. What's Shabbat dinner exchange? Shabbat dinner exchange is where basically they set people up for Shabbos for Friday night. Very nice, you know. You could sign up. Do you want to host? Do you want to be a guest? So we had about 5 or 6 people from the community that we've never really met before, one or two I had met before, who stayed at a house Friday night for Shabbos. They came for Shabbos dinner. It was very, very lovely. So beforehand, the Women of Federation went to each house and dropped off a little care package, a couple of challahs, some candles, and also some pamphlets for the AJE about, it's like a little booklet, a beautiful booklet they put together, 10 ways to make a wonderful Shabbos. Okay? Okay. Wait, 10 things you need. Number one, you need a tzedakah box.
What's a tzedakah box?
You have some boxes.
You need candles. You need challah. You need wine. You need, what's the tzedakah box for, by the way?
To give them some money.
No, not for the race. Before you bench the left, you have to study correct. You need a bencher, you need a shitter, you need zemiras.
things that others had never paid attention.
No, I don't have a problem with tzedakah, so I'm not gonna take issue with that.
Okay.
But if I was you to ask you, anyone in this group here, okay, what is the most important aspect of Shabbos? What would you tell me?
Not working.
The most significant aspect of Shabbos. What?
It's nothing that you can codify.
And we have to not do those things that we do during the week.
All right. I mean,
separated from the rest of the week.
Shmiras Shabbos.
Watch.
What? Right. The guarding of Shabbos. Meaning, Jews today, they want to define themselves. They always want to define themselves. They want to have their sense of meaning through some kind of ritual, by what you do. Through a mitzvah sashay, as it were. Mm-hmm. The one thing they don't want is they don't want to be told what not to do.
Right.
What not to do.
What not to do. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a crazy thing. What the most important aspect of Shabbos? What does Shabbos mean? It's a day of rest.
Day of rest.
So numbers 1 through 10, 10 ways to have a good Shabbos. And here's the AJE, you know, Jewish education, putting out some nice pamphlet. Not one mention. Well,
about resting.
Maybe you shouldn't do malacha on Shabbos, which is the most critical element of what Shabbos is all about. And people will tell you they get the most spirituality out of that resting, out of that withdrawal, out of that holding back. But we live in a culture that says, no, withdrawal is not good. You find meaning through
doing,
through acting, through, you know, through positive accomplishments.
The physical aspect of it.
It's not just the physical.
You know, bench and laugh, but you know,
they want something tangible.
They go to sleep in their cars. They listen.
Well, not just, it's interesting. It's very interesting. Rina shared it with me last night. She, but I also go to school, so I don't have a guitar. You know what I'm saying?
Well, but those are things that they cannot enjoy without. I mean,
what I'm saying to you is it's a whole different mindset. It's an entirely different mindset of, do I find sanctity and spirituality through withdrawal, through control, as it were? Or am I looking for it when I'm trying to add on, have something more, have something extra? And the Torah says, how do you do that? Which is correct? Both. You absolutely need both. You absolutely need both. You want to have the specialness of Shabbos. Correct. But, you know, if you go to somebody's house for Shabbos and then you drive home, you're missing the whole thing. You know, you're missing the entire, you know, the whole aspect of it. You're missing what you're looking for.
It's like the
practical.
Hold on, they're not going to listen to it. But Serena shared with me an article last night that it was in the back of the Jewish Week. Anybody here read the New York Jewish Week? Mm-hmm. There's a woman who wrote, she's obviously an Orthodox woman, about how her whole life she went to shul. She grew up as a shul goer, you know, and she was actually what she called a shul geek. What's a shul geek? Geek? You know what a geek is, right? A nerd. She was a shul geek. Why? Because her father had always drummed into her, you wouldn't come 15 minutes late to a Broadway show. So why would you come late to shul? A good question, isn't it?
It is.
Akasha. Akasha.
And why do so many people come late?
Who cares about them? Just care about yourself.
I care about them.
Yeah, okay.
Meet up what?
You wouldn't come 15 minutes. New York Jewish Week.
Can you get that online?
Yeah, sure. So she writes about how she was always going to shul, even as an adult. She would go, you know, Friday night, she would go Shabbos morning.
Friday night also?
Yeah, I mean, when she was single. And then in New York, on the West Side, in that community, they all go, and she admitted so, she said, for the social scene. Yeah, you meet a lot of people, that's what everybody does. So she said, though, when she got married and she had children, it became an eye-opener for her, because all of a sudden, shul, the whole doing, the whole, you know, everything she identified with her spiritual nourishment for the week, it got taken away from her. Because even she couldn't go to shul, they didn't have a babysitting room in their shul. But even if she couldn't go to shul, she would go to shul, the baby's there, she has to go out, the child grips the sitter. What kind of spirituality is that? And the whole article, the end of the article is how she found spirituality through not going to shul, staying home with her children. And how she was able to find meaning in that as well, and finding that was her purpose. It's just a very interesting piece. Rina, you know, she very much appreciated that you find, you know, sometimes, and everybody's like this, you know, you do, sometimes you do, you have to go to shul, and sometimes you have to not go to shul. You know, you have, yeah, Kiddush and lighting candles and giving tzedakah. But if giving tzedakah is number one on the list of Shabbos, the first thing to do to have a great Shabbos,
no way.
You're not going to understand it. You're not going to appreciate it. That's what's interesting the Torah says. Mikra Kodesh. What's the definition of Mikra Kodesh? Komalecha savudah lo sasa.
Not to work.
You don't do malacha. That's how you sanctify, you dedicate something as Kodesh. As holy. You know, think about the things that we treat holy. Right? How do we treat a Sefer Torah in a holy way? What makes it holy? And the words in it, what makes it holy? How do we treat it that's holy? Right, but it's more, if you think about it, it's not what we do with the Torah, it's what we don't do. Okay? Right? If I put this chumash on a chair, well, I have to put it down on a chair. You wouldn't sit down on that chair.
That's right.
I want to respect that Sefer Torah. I wouldn't put the Sefer Torah on the floor.
No way.
So it's not what I would do. I mean, of course, you take a book, you put it on the table, and you read it. It's what I wouldn't do that makes something Kodesh. Truma, challah, right? What do we do with challah when you take off the challah? What do you do with it? Why? Because a Zar can't eat it.
Not allowed to eat it.
Because somebody, only a Kohen can eat it. It's not that I treat it special, it's that I'm not allowed to eat it. That someone who's not on the level can't eat it. What is the definition of special? The definition of special is it has different rules.
Do Kohanim do that now?
Yeah, they do, because the problem is it's a D'oraita. Right? It's a Din D'oraita, and no Kohen can prove that they're a Kohen be D'oraita, that they'd be sure enough to eat something that's Truma, to eat Kodesh. So that's why we can't, even though, anybody here a Kohen, Kohanic family? Anybody?
We are.
That's why you guys are, right? Right? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Would you bet your life on it?
My father told me he was.
Would he bet his life on it?
No.
I don't think so. I, unless you can prove it. Unless you can prove it. Did he ever get tested for that Kohen gene? There's a gene, they say. There's a DNA, a Kohen DNA. You got it? Yeah, yeah, they said there's a Kohen DNA. Absolutely, there was. What? I think they tested it. I don't know. I know for a fact there's a DNA that's unique to Kohen. Yeah. It would make sense, though. It would make sense. They said that there's a DNA, a gene that they linked to Kohen.
Will the VM as well as Kohanim have the same because
it
came from the same
Yeah, the nobody cares about the Levium. All they do is wash their hands anyway. But all I'm saying is, think about something that's holy. Think about something that's special. How do you treat something special? It isn't what you do, because I could sit around and light candles and sing songs with my family on any day of the week. And sometimes I do. But you designate something as special by what you don't do to it. Yeah, you have special cars. You ever see a guy who wants to treat his car special? So what does he do?
Shabbos has to be.
He doesn't drive it. He doesn't drive it.
But you know,
that's the point.
This charity giving, this has something to do with the concept that people think they can buy themselves loose of what I'm saying. If you are a good Jew, good at heart, and you are charitable, you are doing a great deal, and you are rid of some of these little things that are common.
Right.
Well, I
don't know if I agree with you. I think we just live, and I'm not sure if it's our society or every society, where people don't want to be told what not to do.
Everyone
says. Right. So people, but human beings by definition are pleasure seeking, are fulfillment seeking. I want to fulfill myself. I want to enjoy. Now, that the irony is, the huge irony is, the more enjoyment you have, the less fulfillment you get. Now, you don't feel meaningful after you have enjoyed something. You feel much more meaningful after you've withdrawn and grown from that withdrawal. After you've, you know, held back. After you've done something and controlled yourself. That's the irony. But people, they see it, it looks good, you know, so I want fulfillment. I want, even if you want spirituality, I want the spirituality on my terms. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us, and he knows what, you know, he made us in a certain way. So he says you're going to get that fulfillment not by what you do, but also by what you don't do. So all I'm saying is, you know, we have to communicate that part of Shabbos is try not, you know, at least try to keep Shabbos. For Friday night. Say you're going to keep Shabbos on a Friday night. You're not going to watch television on a Friday. Have some withdrawal. Have some level of control. You're not going to go out on Friday night. You're not going to call someone to the telephone on Friday night. Make it a Shabbos in that way. You know, and you'll find that it's meaningful. It's hard. If you're used to making phone calls and all of a sudden you don't answer the phone, that's hard. But do something. Mention it. Understand that that is more of Shabbos than the other. Because the way the Torah says, Mikra Kodesh, Komalacha, Lo Sha'asu. Don't do any malacha. And this is something that we understand, but it's not something that we really communicate strongly enough. That it isn't what you do, it's what you don't do. And tzedakah is important. Tzedakah is great. You know, the Kiddush and the Zemiras, it's wonderful. The people that I've had experience with tell me that it, the keeping of the Shabbat is just the idea of shutting off the rest of the world. That's what's most meaningful to them. I mean, don't ever anybody say to me, oh, Kiddush was like, you know, unbelievable. It took me to, you know, somewhere else. The lighting, you know. It's like, you see in the Jewish week, it's sponsored by Chabad, the candle lighting. It's good, very nice. Sponsored the candle lighting of the week. Maybe you should have like a Shmir Shabbos. What do I get because I don't, you know, I'm Shomer Shabbos. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay. Somebody wants to sponsor it. Yeah. Pasuk Tes. Daber Hashem Moshe Lemor. So now we get into our period of the year. Daber B'nei Yisrael V'yamar Tzal Lehem. Speak to children of Israel and say to them, Kishavo El Ha'aret Asher Ani Nosein Lachem. When you come to the land which I am going to give you, Ukitzartem es ktsira, Vahabetem es Omer, and you'll bring the Omer, Reshit ketzirchem el hakohen. We're just going to go through what the details are. You bring the Korban HaOmer. When do you bring the Korban HaOmer? Let's see. Ve'enif et haOmer lifnei Hashem lirtson chem, and you bring the Omer before God, lirtson chem, according to you, to gain favor from you, I guess. Mimacharat Hashabbat yenifenu hakohen. The Kohen waves it on Macharas HaShabbos. Does anybody know what day Macharas HaShabbos refers to?
No,
Machar
is tomorrow.
Macharas HaShabbos is the day after the Shabbos. The day after the... What? Interesting. So actually, it turns out that this is one of those historically, classically, very interesting cases where there was a machloket, an argument between the Karaim, the Tzedukim and the Kushim. Yeah. The Tzedukim felt that the Torah says, Mimacharas HaShabbos. So what does it mean? It means Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And Chazal felt, no, the Mishnah was, Macharas HaShabbos. Shabbos refers to the day which you had to rest. Meaning, it refers to the second day of Pesach. So the Tzedukim specifically would want to bring the Korban HaOmer on a Sunday, regardless of when Pesach fell out, and Chazal always would bring the Korban HaOmer on the second day of Pesach. And what's the big ramification? When is Shavuos? Because according to, and the Gemara talks about this extensively, because according to the Karaim, Shavuos was always on a Sunday. Monday, whatever it was. Because the first day of the Omer, if the first day of the Omer is on a Sunday, then the last day, no, it's on a Shabbos, it's on a Sunday.
No, if the first day is on Sunday,
yeah,
7 weeks later would be Sunday, but we're talking 50 days, which is one more day, so it would be Monday.
Mm-hmm. The 50th day is a Sunday. Are we all straight?
No.
49th day is a Shabbos. If today is a Sunday,
oh, right.
The 7th day is a Shabbos,
right.
And then the 8th day is a Sunday.
Right.
So that would mean, according to the Karaim, Shavuos was always on a Sunday. And Chazal said no, and they had big fights about it. Really big fights about it. Okay. Why is the Torah not more specific? Because that's what the Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted me. Macharas HaShabbos and the Torah Shabbat Peh. Look at Rashi. God enjoys a good laugh, probably. I mean, Macharas HaShabbos, I think God enjoys a good laugh as much as anybody.
And you know, that it causes... either that or he expected that it was going to make great mathematicians out of it.
Rashi, Mimacharas HaShabbos, Mimacharas Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Pesach. The day after the first day, She'imata Omer Shabbos, Bereshis, Iata Yodea Ezehu. Because if you say it refers to Sunday, okay, which Sunday? So therefore Chazal felt strongly and they were covered, they established, so the day after the other. Good. On the day you wave the Omer, okay, you bring a ram offering, and every offering in the Beit HaMikdash had with it a grain offering, right? So its grain offering was, a meal offering was a 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil. Okay, and it also had a libation of wine, a quarter hin of wine. Okay, anybody know how much a quarter hin is? Quarter hin, it's a measurement. I don't know either. Belechem v'karli v'karmel. So here you're going to learn something you might not have known. Bread. A roasted kernels, or plump kernels. Lo shochlu ad esem hayom hazeh. You may not eat it until this day. Ad haviyachem es korban elokechem. Until you bring this korban offering. Chukas olam b'doroseichem b'chol mashvoseichem.
What does that mean?
What is it?
The people who don't eat new flour. Yes. They don't use new flour.
What's it called?
Yashin. They only eat
Chadash. You ever walk into Jerusalem Pizza and you see that it says, Yashin flour.
Yeah, flour.
I like to say, I always keep Yashin during Sfiras HaOmer. Always.
Well, everybody does.
Right. I'm just kidding. Okay. I'm just hiring Yashin during
Sfiras. Yeah, they don't buy certain kinds of flour, certain kinds of Yashin, certain kinds of...
Why? Well, I mean, you know why? Yeah, we think, oh, people keep Yashin. Oh, they're crazy. Oh, those crazy Haredim that are so machmir, you can't eat anything with them, right?
Well, it's a big thing.
Oh, I didn't say it was easy.
Hold on.
All I said is, it's just in the Torah. Let's read it again. Lechem, bread, and kali and karmel, and different types of grains, roasted and not roasted. Lo tochlu. At etzem hayom hazeh. Until that day, ad haviyachem et korban elohechem. Until you offer God's offering. So the rabbis learn now, it's very clear, even if you don't have the korban, you still have to wait for the day. Chukas olam doroseichem. It is a chukas olam. It's pretty heavy. B'chol moshvoseichem.
That
everywhere
mean?
That you live. What?
What does that mean, really? What they can't use.
It means
can't use
any grain that took seed after Pesach may not be eaten until the following Pesach.
Wow.
So therefore, if you want to go into your garden and plant wheat today, you would not be able to eat that wheat until the next Pesach. Okay. That grain, all grain that's planted, that takes seed, after Pesach is called Chadash.
Right.
Okay?
Chadash is the new one.
Old grain, right now we're all eating what's called Yashan. Right? Why? Because every grain, any flour that you get in the store was already performed before Pesach. Okay? But here's the problem. Look at Rashi. B'chol moshvo seichem, see Rashi says, Nechwaku bo chach me Yisrael. The rabbis argued, Yesh alamdu mikan shachadash noheg b'chutz la'aretz. Some say chadash applies in chutz la'aretz. V'yesh omrim lo ba'al alamei. So some say no, it only comes to teach us. Shalo nisabe al chadash el al acha yerusha v'yeshiva mishe kashvu kapshu v'chilfil. So it's a machlokas amarayim. And it's not a machlokas we're left in a suffix situation. It's a machlokas, does chadash apply in chutz la'aretz or not? So, usually we say it's a suffix d'oraita. It's a din d'oraita. So in America, do we say chadash or not? So usually if I have a suffix d'oraita, let's say, is this, hot dog, is it a kosher hot dog or not? So suffix d'oraita, would you eat it?
If you're not sure, you don't.
No. So apparently it came out that a minhag came out, and rabbis tried to justify it to say that really, we don't know if it applies d'oraita, if it applies in chutz la'aretz or not. Plus, there's also another suffix. Every time you get some grain, flour, where's that flour from? Is it from the old grain? Or is it from the new grain? And apparently in America, it's unbelievably convoluted and complicated. It's very, very hard to know, is the flour you're getting, there's summer wheat, and then there's winter wheat, and what year is the summer wheat from, what year is the winter wheat from? So, I think I told you this once. There's this guy in Muncie, I think, who puts out a booklet. And if you want to keep chadash in America, it's very, very hard, because then you have to look at the product codes to find out when it was manufactured, and then he can't even tell you all the time, with certainty when the flour was shipped, even for that.
Well, think about it. When you see those huge silos, they never empty them out completely. It's always being mixed, so it's always mixed.
I don't know if they empty them completely, but they know when the stock is from it, and they know, there's a whole science probably to how long will the flour last, and how long
that's
they keep it,
and
are they cycling it. So apparently it also used to be that they used to keep a few years surplus But then there was one year where the Russians didn't have any food. The United States gave like the whole wheat surplus to the Russians, from what I understand. That's the whole Chadash gig, you know. That, you know, it was nice for the Russians, but bad for anybody who wants to eat Chadash. So I mean, it's interesting. Mrs. Gittleman, when she was sick, so her daughter was in from Toronto, and she was telling me, we were talking about this Chadash thing, and she said that she lives on the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. So there, they're all careful. So first of all, in Toronto, it's easier. And second of all, if you live in a community of people that are keeping Chadash, it's much easier. Why? Because everybody buys at the beginning of the year. Now they can all go to Costco and buy a ton of flour. I mean, literally, a ton of flour. And they try to estimate how much they're going to need between now and Pesach.
200 pounds.
Yeah, 200 pounds of flour. Right? Because they can buy regular flour now. Now it's all Yashan, it's called. The problem is, what do you do if you run out? So then, how many families live in Eretz Yisrael? Like 70, 100 families? 80 families. So they have an exchange. I've got a little extra pasta. You have a little bit of extra flour. But they all have these huge bins. You know, they basically create silos in their homes in order to maintain Chadash. They buy a ton of cereal also.
Okay.
Doesn't it ever get wormy?
Well, in Lakewood, it's even easier because in Lakewood, a lot of the stores will carry products. And now, what I want to tell you, what I'm just trying to communicate with you is, this is not a chumrah like, you know, this is not a chumrah like, what did we talk about last night, like diluting your soap. Right? It's not a chumrah like that. This is a serious one. I personally believe it's much more serious than Chalav Yisrael. Again, it's interesting, some people are very careful about Chalav Yisrael, but then they don't do Chadash, and I think it should be the opposite. The problem is Chadash is much, much, much harder. It's very, very tricky to do. You know, and you have to be really dedicated in order to do it. You know, and then what do? You go to somebody else's house, and they're not having it, and can you buy bread, and not buy bread? It's tricky.
You buy the flour with the OU on it.
No, not Chadash. The OU does not enforce. Because the prevalent custom in America today is we're not careful about Chadash, about Yashan. And it makes a huge, huge difference. But just understand that it's a mitzvah. I read it. It's right in the Torah. It's a din to Araisa. But we basically have certain leniencies to say, well, it doesn't apply in America, and a chutz la'aretz, and we don't know, is the grain not? But it's not so simple. I'm going to, you know, and if you see Yashin flour and non-Yashin flour, there's nothing wrong, just like, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying, when I have it, when I can find it, I make an effort to get Yashin flour.
Okay.
So during Sfira, you know, I'm very
what
careful.
What kind of flour am I buying? My gold medal? What is that?
You buy gold medal flour today.
Yes.
Without a doubt, that flour took seed, that grain took seed before this Pesach. Correct?
Yeah.
So that's Yashin.
Yeah.
But as time goes along, let's say now you're buying flour in January. Are you sure that wasn't the summer wheat that grew in the months of June, July, and August?
Yeah.
Do you understand? So then you don't know. Then it's maybe Yashan, maybe not.
Well, I've never been detected on
that. Right. But what I'm saying to you is, it's not such a terrible thing to try to be careful for.
What
if you can.
Yeah.
How would you know? So you have two choices. The one stop sells, I think, some Yashan flour, which is not prohibitively expensive if you can afford it.
I think the pizza place has a sign that didn't.
Yeah, they do.
Yashin flour.
Some places nowadays. I know people in Detroit do this. There are places that will store your flour for you. Meaning, you want them to set aside. I know people do this. There's like a company, I guess. You set aside, like Mrs. Gittleman is talking about, a couple hundred pounds of flour, and that's probably what the pizza store does. They set aside a few hundred pounds, probably then thousands of pounds of flour, and they pay a fee for storage. And it's stored with the other flour, and they get, you know, and their delivery is from the old flour and not from the new flour, and they certify it as such.
So how do you watch it now?
Yeah.
And Rabbi Box was one of the guests, and he sent someone back into the kitchen to ask me when I had purchased flour.
Really?
Yeah.
Did it pass muster?
Yeah, I've gotten a whole case that I've had for a year or something.
Okay. Now, it's also interesting, the trick is, it's also interesting that, you know, also the Torah commands you to get rid of your chametz before Pesach. Right, so you're like, Ms. Gittleman said, they're up against the gun, because they're trying to finish off, you know, they're trying to finish it all up, and they don't save, right? They don't save.
They don't sell the flour.
They give it to their maids.
How you make it from the old flour and new flour?
No, once the old flour is old, it doesn't become new.
Oh.
It's old.
It's old.
Yeah.
So how do you watch it for spirit? Like you say, you're very observant.
How am I very observant for spirit? You didn't get it. How am I very careful about that? It's not a spirit. During the spirit, everything is yashin because it was all from before Pesach.
So what did you watch?
Nothing. I was just joking. I was kidding. Yeah. It was a trick question. You understand what I'm saying?
Now I understand.
Yeah. Okay.
I lied.
It's the Omer, the barley. It's an offering that the barley. First of all, barley only if it became mixed with water.
Oh.
Right. So they wouldn't offer it. It was not coming from the Beis Hamikdash. That's correct. Good question. All I'm saying is that it's interesting. The Chazon Ish. I also want to share with you a little bit of history. They asked the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was very much against. The Chazon Ish lived in Israel was very much against innovation, because you know more modern Jews and doing different things, and also certain Piskei Halacha he wasn't comfortable with. So he came out with a statement. He said Chadash Asher Min HaTorah. Okay, Chadash, that which is new is Asher Min HaTorah. And this is, by the way, the mantra of much of Orthodoxy even today. Chadash Asher Min HaTorah. We do what we always did. Our students learned a certain way, we teach them that way. They learned, you know, they had a certain customs, we maintain those customs. Things don't change. So I just want to explain to you, when the Chazon Ish said that, he was actually quoting the Gemara. Right? The Gemara says, Chadash is Asher Min HaTorah. Because Chadash refers to the wheat that's new. The wheat that's new, you just read it, Asher Min HaTorah. So he used it and paraphrased it as a way of trying to stave off innovation in what he felt was inappropriate ways. Yeah. This is where I had a question.
Maybe you just answered it. Maybe I missed it completely. What is the problem with Nachem? What is the problem that we're talking about?
I don't understand the question.
Why do we have
right? Why is this? Why is this written? Why do we have this? What is the problem?
Because God sent so.
Is that? I mean, that's it.
That's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is you're not allowed. That's what the Torah says.
Okay.
I mean, I don't. You know,
no.
You want to know the reason behind it? I'd have
the
to look up
the. Is there a basis behind it?
Let's take a look. Hold on a second. I don't know. I just wasn't prepared for that.
You're so loving. Was that? Taking it away.
1 second. So I'm looking. I'm just looking off the top of my head. I'm looking. Here, I'm reading in the Sefer HaChinuch. So the Sefer HaChinuch himself, the author, the Sefer HaChinuch gives you, he goes mitzvah by mitzvah, and he explains the reasons for different mitzvahs. So first of all, he says to you in the introduction, he says, I just want you to know that my book is only for informational purposes. Okay, why do we keep mitzvahs? Because God says so. God commanded the Jewish people. Now, if you want to know if I can figure out some other reasons, here goes. The root of the mitzvah is the fish she'ikar michyatan shall briot he batzuot. What is the essence of our sustenance for those people not on the Atkins diet?
Bread.
Or what?
Bread
is the staple. Bread. Grains. Okay. In fact, the Atkins diet, and you know, it is just no. I never bought it into intellectually. Why? Because you know, God created us. You can't just eat meat. It's not healthy. It can't be healthy. Anyway, end editorial. Zalkein, Rori lahakriv mehem korban lashem. So you should offer grain as an offering to God. Okay, asher netanam to give it terem yehanu mehem briotah. So before you benefit from it, before you enjoy it, first you have to offer it to God. Okay. Like they said, like the Rabbanim said, anyone who benefits from this world without a bracha, it's as if you ma'al, you stole from God. You stole hedges. Isn't it interesting? I started off by talking about Shabbos, and I hear the Torah says the exact same thing. How do you sanctify your bread at home? Not just by washing, by not eating it until after God got his. Right? How do you sanctify your own sustenance, your very existence, the bread, the pasta, the crackers, the cake, everything? The flour is the basis of our existence. By saying to God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not going to have until you have. And I'm going to make sure that the grain I eat is only after you took. And I'm going to save my grain that I grew from this year. I'm going to save it until you took yours. Because it's not right for me to take from that which you've given me until I give to you first. Chol zeh, and this is, v'hachshir atzmeinu, to prepare us, sh'niyeh re'uyim mekabel mituvo, that we should be worthy to receive God's goodness. As I wrote many, many times. Yom shisha asar b'nisan, the 16th day of Nisan, hayinu makrivin b'zman habayit korban ha'omer, we would bring this omer sacrifice from the new barley, because that's the grain that ripens first. And that allows all of the other types of grain. What a powerful message. I'm glad you asked. It's a very powerful message. You know? Who comes first? I mean, you take this in the morning also. You know, who eats first? You eat first, or you first daven? We do this all. You're supposed to daven first. Because what comes first?
Thank God for waking you up.
That's right. Does Rahu come first? Or your needs come first? You know? And the same thing, like I said, about Shabbos. Is it your needs or Kaddish Baruch Hu's needs? So Kaddish Baruch Hu, I need to make Kiddush. I need to light candles. I need to enjoy. I want to feel that Shabbos. Yeah, but what sets the tone? What's precedent? What's more important? You know, and the same thing with Chadash also. This idea of, and it's tremendously involved. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that very often one thing that they took into account is that they would have to figure out the months. So the way you figure out the months, the way you figure out the calendar, let's say, for example, during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, the times of Sanhedrin, let's say it turns out that Pesach was going to be too early. Right? It turns out Pesach was going to be in the middle of March, it was still cold.
So they made another month.
They add another month. Which month do they add?
Adar.
Yeah, right? So Pesach would be a month later. So the Gemara says that there were certain times when they couldn't make it a month later, they had to leave it the way it was, and the people were happy. Why?
Why do they have to leave it?
For whatever reason. There were certain conditions weren't fulfilled, they had to leave it. Why were the people happy? Because it was very hard on them. You know, it's not like we have today stores and grain. You go to Costco, you buy a gazillion pounds of flour and you're finished. They were running out. I mean, they were year to year. They wasn't, you know, they had enough for the winter and then they grew and they needed more. It was a big deal for them to store from a year and a half before.
You didn't have freezers either.
Yeah, very, very hard. Very, very hard. And also, to keep it in such a way that vermin wouldn't infest it.
Put it in the freezer.
They put the spearmint gum.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think they had spearmint gum back in the times of the Beis HaMikdash.
You take a bay leaf.
Whatever they try, my understanding is whatever you try, I think they assume you just lose a certain amount. It's gone. You just assume that a certain amount of it, because, you know, how are you supposed to store it? You know, they didn't have concrete barriers and pesticides. And they didn't have that kind of thing. It was just very, very hard. It's a very, very demanding thing that the Torah demanded on Bnei Israel to say, yeah, this is your sustenance. This is the bread by thou man shall not live by bread alone. You wait. Wait for me until HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes first. Okay, let's go on a little bit more. I was going to share with you. I have a whole bunch of midrashim.
Oh, what can you do? You said how it's forbidden to us. Wouldn't you think that they would not demand of us to save that stuff, but we should just the opposite, use it when it's new so that it doesn't become infested?
He didn't write the Torah.
Why would this God say to eat it right away before the bugs can get it? There's no way to store all the grain that you need. You need it for winter. You need it for a year. Right? The goal was to harvest enough to last you for the year. So it had to be stored. The question is, when do you start eating it, and when is your storage date from? So there's no way to grow grain that you could continue eating it on a continual basis. It was impossible. Okay. Pasuk Tesvat. And you should count from the day after Shabbos, which is the day after the first day of Yontif. You have to count seven Shabbosos to me most, seven pure weeks. Until the day after that seventh Shabbos, you should count 50 days. And you will offer a new mincha, a new offering to Hashem. What should you bring? You bring a bread of waving. So this time, on Pesach, you just bring the barley. On Shavuos, what do you bring? Lechem tenufa. Shtayim, two. Shnei esronim solitiyana. Each one, there are two esronim, two regiments. Chametz te'afena. You bake them as chametz bikurim b'Hashem. These are called bikurim, the first breads for Hashem. So it's interesting, in the Beis Hamikdash, I don't know if you read my May bulletin thing. So they brought a korban called the shtei halechem, the two breads. And these shtei halechem were chametz. They had to be chametz. Almost never else in the Beis Hamikdash should they offer chametz in the Beis Hamikdash. It was always matzah. It was always not chametz there. But these breads had to be baked specifically as chametz. Here, I have some midrashim. Well, let's just quickly, we'll see if we can, I know you have to run, we'll see if I can just run through one or two of them. Okay. Why do we have the shtei alechem? Look at what it says. Can you see where it says Yud Zayin?
Yeah, you have two.
Okay. Mimosvotechem. See what says Yud Zayin? Mimosvotechem taviu lechem tenufa shtayin. By the way, I recommend again, this is the midrash that I'm working out of, and it's written, the midrashim are relatively easy to understand if your midrash is good, and it's such a worthwhile set to have. It's called Otsar Midrashim, just a beautiful sefer. You know, we don't learn midrash enough, and these midrashim are so, so powerful. Lama haviyu tenufash, lama haviyu shtei alechem. So the midrash wants to know, why did they bring the shtei alechem? Bishvil, so that, shtei lechem sha'achlu Yisrael, the two breads that the Jewish people ate. What are those two breads? Ha'achad kishyatsu minitzayim achlu matzah lechem oni ve'er matzah v'asheni kishahayu b'midbar. And the second one was when they were in the desert, kakasuv, as it says, hinani mamtir lechem lechem min hashamayim. I'm giving you sustenance from the sky. V'lachem korban hayom hu min halechem. The sacrifice is from the bread. V'halechem hikrivu shah ha'korbanot halechem haya ikar. So why do we have two bread? One, the first one is to thank God for Pesach. And the second is to thank God for His sustaining us.
For the month.
Right, for the month. And it's very interesting. The months are always an allegory, are always compared. They're always a symbol of God's gift, His benevolence upon us, His gift of grain to us. You know, and it is interesting that the bread is something that we all really very much take for granted. And it's an amazing thing. It's a, you know, it's a crazy thing. Bread. Yeah. So the Torah says, can't take it for granted. The Jewish people have to understand and appreciate and bring these shtei halechem. Let's look at the next one. Taviyu lechem tinufa. Tanya. It's a very interesting midrash. Am Rabbi Yehuda Mishun Rabbi Akiva. Say Rabbi Yehuda, name Rabbi Akiva. Inei ma amra Torah haviyu shtei lechem batzeres. Why did the Torah say bring the shtei halechem on Shavuos? It neisha atzeres zman peiros ha'ilon hu. Because this is when the fruits are growing on the trees. Amar kodesh baruch hu Yisrael, so said God to the Jewish people, haviyu lefanai shtei halechem ba'atzeres, bring before me these breads on Shavuos, kedei shiyidbarchu lechem peiros ha'ilon, so that you'll have a blessing from the fruit trees. Okay. Skip down. You see where it says Va'ani Shamati?
Fifth line up.
Va'ani Shamati to Rabbi Yehuda l'tameh. I heard that Rabbi Yehuda said according to his reasoning. Ta'azla command the Amr b'Sanhedrin. It says in Sanhedrin, Eish she'achal Adam harishon chita haya.
Oh, really?
What was the forbidden fruit that Chava ate and then gave to Adam?
Wheat.
It was wheat.
Really?
Yeah, it's a machlokes.
Wasn't an apple.
Wasn't for sure. Wasn't an apple. Some say it was a date. Some say it was a pomegranate. Some also say it was wheat.
So,
it was that was the eitz alechem, the stalk of life, the staff of life. Like you said, that God said don't eat it. And she wanted to eat it. I don't know why. I mean, wheat doesn't look too good to me. But okay, she wanted to eat wheat. So what did the shtei alechem of the bikurim come for? In a way, as an atonement for the chait of Adam HaRishon. But it brings about our sense of completion. God said no, and He did, and now God says, okay, you can correct that by bringing this shtei halechem, by bringing this bread on Shavuos. On which particular day, interestingly enough, when is the day of redemption for the chait of Adam HaRishon come? Just so happens to be on the same day the Jews got the Torah. What a coincidence. Okay, have a good week.